This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This week on the Relic Radio Show, it's another 60 minutes, plus or minus, a variety of old-time radio shows like we do every week. This week we're going to start off with The Zero Hour, an episode titled Terror in the Night. That'll be followed up with Incredible But True and The Lady in the Lake. We'll finish off this week with Suspense, an episode titled The Black Door from November 19th, 1961. But first, here's Rod Serling and The Zero Hour.
I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to The Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. Today, Glenn Hall Taylor's frightening suspense thriller, Terror in the Night. Starring Mel Torme. In a Mutual Broadcasting System presentation of The Zero Hour.
Brought to you by the makers of General Motors Parts, by the State Farm Insurance Company, by Dial Soap, and by the makers of Contact on Mutual Radio.
California stands a Rococo Victorian house, a relic of the gold rush days of the last century. The house once rang with the laughter of the Schofield family, but today only Audrey Schofield and her granddaughter Karen are sheltered beneath a steep pitched roof. A 10-foot post stands next to the RFD mailbox. From a bracket is suspended a sign which reads, Tourist Accommodations. In summer, Audrey and her grandmother derive a comfortable income from tourists. But this is the fall season, and on this Saturday night, Audrey and Karen are alone. In the living room, Audrey is knitting in a chair before the fireplace. Karen sits staring at the fire. A gentle collie sleeps in the warmth of the hearth.
Karen, dear, why are you so glum tonight?
It's not a cheerful night. Sometimes the rain is warm and friendly, but tonight at least the house feels cold and clammy. The way I imagine a tomb fire.
Karen, what on earth?
Out the window. A man's face.
Oh, I don't see anyone, dear.
Grandma!
Oh, for heaven's sake, child. It's just someone at the door.
The same someone who was looking in the window. I'm scared.
Oh, nonsense. Probably someone wanting a room for the night. Funny, I don't see anyone here.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to frighten you.
These old eyes, young man. For a moment, they didn't adjust to the darkness out there. May I help you?
Oh, I thought you might have a vacancy.
Well, as a matter of fact, we do. Come on in. Just set your suitcase down anywhere.
Get away from that suitcase.
Hang yourself there. Now get away. Shoot. Why don't you come on in here by the fire, Mr.
Lewis. Steve Lewis. Sorry, I spoke to the dog that way. He startled me.
I'm Mrs. Schofield. This is my granddaughter, Karen.
Howdy, Karen.
Hello.
Say, this is real nice and cozy. I love an open fire. Why are you looking at me like that?
I was wondering why you were peering in the window before you knocked.
Oh, well, the house reminded me of one that I saw in an old Boris Karloff movie. I thought I'd see something spooky instead of a sweet old lady and a pretty girl.
Would you like to put your car in the garage?
Oh, well, I have already.
How long will you be staying?
I'm not sure yet. Will the room be available for a few days?
Well, you stay as long as you like.
Oh, that's just fine, fine. By the way, I haven't told anyone where I'd be. I just had to get away from everything for a few days. You know how it is. I'd appreciate it if you didn't mention to anybody that I'm here.
I understand. Body has to get away from his troubles once in a while. Yeah. But don't you worry, young man. We won't say anything to anybody.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Now, your room is at the far end of the hall on this floor.
Good. I'll put my suitcase in there right now.
Would you like me to fix you a little supper?
Oh, I'd appreciate that very much. Is this the way to the room?
Yes. I'll get the key and be right with you.
Tell me, Jerry, how come our Mariposa County Sheriff is mixed up in a murder that happened in Stockton?
Well, I'll brief it to you, Sam, but you got to keep it out of your paper until I give you the word. Now, to fill you in, this whole mess started in Oakland early this afternoon. A six-foot guy wearing a gray suit knocked over a movie theater in Oakland. He forced his way through the door at the back of the cashier's booth, threatened her with a heavy tire iron. He pocketed his take, made a getaway in the Saturday crowd. And then he apparently commandeered a traveling jewelry salesman's car, forced him to drive him to Stockton. Body was found near there.
How do you know all this?
Well, we don't have the actual proof yet, but the jewelry salesman's head was bashed in. His body had been dragged into some bushes. In addition, a quarter of an inch fragment of a gray suit material was found on a branch nearby.
Now, the murdered man had been robbed, of course.
Well, it's fairly evident. We found the salesman's sample case near his body. It was empty.
Why do you think he might be in this area?
Well, we have a description of the guy. Cashier furnished that. In the glove compartment, we found a new automobile insurance policy number with a make, model, and license number of his car. The owner of a station in Coulterville on Highway 49 remembered a guy in a gray suit who got out to get a drink of water and to ask about the road to Mariposa. He was driving a car just like the salesman's.
I hear the victim was in terrible shape.
No, that's an understatement. This guy must be out of his gourd. A sadist or something. He clobbered him I don't know how many times.
It's late for us to be washing dishes, but it did my heart good to see the way that young Mr. Lewis cleaned his plate.
I wonder what he's got in that suitcase.
His clothes, silly. What else?
That's what I'm wondering. What else? You saw the way he acted when Angus started sniffing it.
My goodness, Karen, that imagination of yours.
Angus wasn't imagining. He smelled something he didn't like. And I don't like the idea of us being alone with that man in the house.
Well, we can't turn him out in the rain.
I know. I'll call Uncle Matt and ask him to spend the night with us.
He'll laugh at you.
I'll get him over here. Don't worry. Hello? 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 The phone is dead, Grandma.
What do you suppose happened to it?
I know what could have happened to it. And I'm going to go find out.
Well, how about this? Seems we have a real hot one on our hands.
What is it, Jerry?
We left us some prints off the sample case we found near the body. We transmitted them to Washington. Now, according to this teletype, our tire iron of virtuoso is a Harry Hanford, 33, 6 feet, half an inch tall, 185 pounds, black hair, served term for assault and robbery. Here's a topper. Wanted for murder in Houston.
Sounds like a charming fellow.
Want to take a ride with me?
You know me. Anything for a story. Especially if it'll get me a good obituary.
No one's reported seeing the car since he left that service station in Coulterville. I think he's gone into hiding someplace since he left, which means it almost has to be this area.
So?
So I'm going to update the APB that's already out and check out every tourist camp, motel, and guest house from Mariposa to Coulterville. Let's go.
Karen, why did you go out in all that rain?
My aunt was right. I checked the telephone wires on the side of the house. They've been cut.
He did it. I know he did.
But why, dear?
I don't know why. I only know he's evil. Shh. Here he comes.
Oh, pardon me. I'll get settled down shortly and I won't disturb you anymore. But I have to get something for my car. I won't be long.
Come, Grandma. Quick.
Where to?
I'm going to look in that suitcase.
What if he comes back and catches us? He's
there. Here's the suitcase. Oh, move that chair over here. Good. Well, look at all that jewelry.
Oh, my.
He's just tossed it on top of his clothes. It must be worth tons of money. I wonder what else is in here. Oh, what's this wrapped in his shirt? Whatever it is, it's heavy. There.
Well, unwrap it. Be quick. He's liable to get back.
Look. Oh. There's blood on it.
Oh, you're right. You're right, lady. That is blood. It's a man's blood. I killed him.
Oh.
You don't seem surprised, young lady.
Young man, we're not going to let you hide in this house. I'm going to...
And where do you think you're going?
I don't know. Let go of my arm, please.
And you, young lady, you pick that up and put it back where you got it. I said, pick it up, damn it. Shut up.
Down, Angus. Quiet.
Yeah, that's better. Now then, let's all understand each other, okay? Until I'm ready to leave, you'll do exactly as I say, or I may just have to show you how well I can handle that tire iron.
That may be another tourist. I really ought to answer.
I'll answer it. You roll that tire iron up in that shirt again and hand it to me.
What are you going to do with it?
I'm
going to
tuck it under my coat while I answer the front door. You didn't think I'd leave it here with you, did you? Thank you. Now, both of you. Both of you be quiet as baby mice. I'll just lock you in here while I take care of our late caller. Coming! Yes?
I hate to bother you at this hour of the night, but I saw your sign and hoped you weren't all filled up.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to turn you down.
Oh?
There's sickness in the house.
Well, I guess I'll just have to push into Mariposa and find my luck there. Thanks anyway. Good night.
Night. Well, you behave very nicely. Yes, sorry I had to turn away some tourist business, but I'm sure you understand.
Only too well.
Now, look, you must know this can't go on indefinitely. I can't stay here forever, and I can't very well leave you here.
You could kill us. Karen, what a thing to say.
Yeah, isn't it? Especially when I have better use for you.
What do you mean?
Well, nobody will suspect a nice young man like me if I'm traveling with a sweet old lady and a pretty young girl, especially if I'm driving a car the police aren't looking for. Now then, hand over the keys to your station wagon, get your coats on, and let's get out of here.
Well, what do you know, customers? Hi, Sheriff. Hi, Sam.
Where is everybody?
Well, they sure been staying away from here tonight. Except for that guy at the end of the counter.
Two coffees, Shorty. Anything with it, Jerry?
Oh, coffee's fine, thanks.
You know, seeing you two together at this hour makes me figure something's cooking besides my chili.
Oh, just us snooping, Shorty. Hey, tell me, are there any houses north of here close by that is taking tourists?
Well, there's a good place a few miles north, the Schofield House.
Did you say the Schofield House?
Yes, sir.
Excuse me for butting in, but I thought you ought to know that... I was there a while ago and got turned down. The fellow that came to the door said that someone was sick.
Fellow? You must be talking about another place. There ain't no man lives at the Schofield House, just an old lady and her granddaughter.
It was the Schofield House, all right. I saw the name on the mailbox.
What did this guy look like, mister?
Well, I'm afraid I didn't pay much attention.
He was a tall fellow. Had on a gray suit, as I remember. Why?
Come on, Sam. Let's get the hell out of here.
Into the back seat, Grandma. Come on, come on. In you go.
Take your hands off me.
You, young lady, get in the front seat.
No.
I said get in there.
Oh.
Mom, we're losing time. I'm sorry Angus had to miss the trip, but a dog is such a responsibility, you know.
Wait, there's a car coming.
Yeah, I see it.
It's slowing to turn in our driveway.
Well, that's too bad, because they're going to have to wait for us to drive out first.
It's the sheriff's car.
Oh, dear.
Hey, stop! Hold on to your hat, Sam. We're going to have to fly this thing. Figure a way to grab him without hurting the old lady and the girl. Hit the resin siren, will you? Thanks.
Can you catch up and force him off the road?
Maybe. I don't want to crash him. We're gaining on him. Get that seatbelt fastened just in case something happens.
Okay. Now, how about you?
In God we trust.
98 miles an hour. You weren't kidding about flying this heat. Another 2 miles an hour, and we will be airborne.
Now we've got him. I'm going to pass and crowd him onto the shoulder. Brace yourself just in case I broke my driver's test.
Oh, my God!
No.
We make it!
Please, Hanford.
Thank God.
Get out of the car with your hands up. Plant him on a car roof and spread him.
All right. Take it easy, you dumb pig. You got me.
I'll dump him on the floor in the back of my car and you can drive the ladies home.
Are you ladies all right?
Yes, thank you. But I'll tell you something. The first thing I'm going to do after I get a good night's rest is take down that tourist accommodation sign.
I don't blame you. You know, sometimes a person can be too damned accommodating. Okay, creep, let's go.
I'm Rod Serling. Close your eyes, exercise your imagination, and join us again on our next presentation of The Zero Hour.
Terror in the Night was adapted for radio by Glenn Hall Taylor. Mel Torme was heard as the killer. Featured in the cast were Lou Krugman, Peggy Weber, Sam Edwards, Diane Hale, and Bill Keane. Zero Hour. Created by J.M. Coates, directed by Don Hills, is produced in Hollywood for the Mutual Broadcasting System by Radio Productions Incorporated. Music composed and conducted by Stanley D. Hoffman. Rochelle Sherman, associate producer. This has been a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Contrary to popular belief and to the conceptions of the writers of horror stories, strange and mysterious events do not require strange and mysterious settings. One of the most remarkable incidents in all the annals of the incredible took place on the teeming streets of New York City. It was there that the girl named Dorothy Arnold was last seen in human form.
Missing persons have long been a daily phenomenon in this largest city in the world. Consequently, the chief of the Missing Persons Bureau of New York City looked upon it as a matter of routine when on December 13th, 1910, a middle-aged man in a state of great agitation came bustling into the room.
You people have got to help me find her. She's gone, disappeared. I want you to start looking for her this very minute.
That might be easier if we knew who she is.
It's my ward. It's Dorothy Arnold.
How long has she been missing?
Almost 24 hours. She came to my office yesterday morning. When she left, I walked up Fifth Avenue a few blocks with her. We separated at 79th Street.
Which way did she go?
She went into the park. She always came home for dinner, but she didn't show up. I waited up for her all night, but there was no sign of her.
Within a half hour, the elaborate police machinery had gone into motion. In every section of the city, it was known that Dorothy Arnold, aged 20, 5 feet 5 inches tall, blue eyes, light blonde hair, was missing. The hospital lists were scrutinized. The recent arrivals at the municipal morgues were examined closely. Shadowy figures who were well known to the police were rounded up and questioned. The following morning, the chief of the missing persons department was ready to report to Robert Decker.
We haven't found a single clue so far, Mr. Decker. But I wouldn't be too discouraged if I were you. It's been our experience that when girls disappear the way your ward disappeared, it's usually because they want to.
You mean you think Dorothy ran away?
She doubtless had at least one male friend who wouldn't have been averse to the idea, didn't she?
The only man she cared about, the only man she ever paid the slightest attention to, happens to be in Italy at the moment. When she came to my office, she was planning a tea for some of her former classmates, about 60 of them. It was to be held in my home next Thursday, the 17th. We talked about it all the way up Fifth Avenue, and Dorothy was tremendously pleased and excited about the whole thing. When she left me there at the 79th Street entrance to the park, she was well and happy. And then something happened to her.
From that day until this, Dorothy Arnold has never been seen again. All this, one may say, is scarcely remarkable. But the case of Dorothy Arnold becomes remarkable when one considers an item that was printed in the pages of the New York Sun on December 13th, the day her disappearance was reported.
Scientists were baffled by an unprecedented occurrence in Central Park this morning. There has never been a swan on the park lake before, but one appeared there today. The swan, a full-grown and particularly beautiful specimen, was first observed on that portion of the lake which borders the 79th Street entrance.
No, Dorothy Arnold's disappearance has never been explained, nor has anyone ever been able to explain the presence of the swan on the lake in Central Park. All that can be said is that the two events occurred at the same time and in the same place. This is a fact which leads one to certain inescapable and astonishing conclusions. A fact incredible but true.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Listen now to Act One of The Black Door, starring Robert Reddick, featuring Ralph Camargo, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur. The mistake I made was going through that black door. If I'd left it shut the way it was, sealed tight, everything would have been fine. I'd have married Marcia, become a full professor, had my name in all the papers. Well, there's no use telling the story backwards, is there? First things first, as old Professor Wentworth always said. And the first thing in this case is the grant I received for a lost city in Central America. The city of the fire god. Which might mean something, or might mean nothing. Anyway, I got the grant from the university, chartered a modern helicopter for 3 months, flew it down to Central America, got the necessary government permissions, and made my base of operations the tiny little town of San Marcos on the coast. As nearly as I could figure from the manuscript, the city of the fire god was someplace among the mountains in that area. So I flew back and forth over the mountains in the helicopter, keeping a lookout for ruins in the jungle or the mountain valleys. And for 2.5 months, I saw nothing except trees and rocks. In the town, I was charitably looked upon as a crazy yonky. And finally, even the children stopped staring at me. But I was getting pretty discouraged. And trying to forget my troubles in a glass of tequila in a little garden outside the town's only cafe, while some native with a guitar serenaded his girl nearby.
Waiter?
What?
Oh, there you are.
Pardon, senor. I am not the waiter. He's busy.
Busy? No one's been busy in this town since Columbus discovered America.
That's very true, senor, but I have paid the waiter to go somewhere else. That's why he's busy. look at this, senor.
Well, let me see that. Tiny statue, very old.
statue carved out of volcanic basalt in the style of the oldest known Mayan carving. Where did you get that?
Oh, that is easily answered, senor.
Well, then tell me.
My grandfather, he gave it to me when he died.
Well, where did he get it?
Senor, that is a harder question.
Now, look, if you came here just to play games with me,
No, senor. That is why I sent away the waiter. So we could talk confidentially.
Yes, well, let's talk confidentially. Where did that little statue come from?
From the mountains, senor.
But the whole country is mountains.
See, that is true, but... you see, my grandfather was a great hunter. Once he followed a wounded jaguar high into the mountains. Mm. Some savage natives then followed my grandfather.
Yes?
Well, he was wounded, and to escape, he climbed a great cliff.
Go on.
And he reached the top, and on the other side, he saw a dead city.
A dead city?
Si, senor. Silent. Lifeless. Far below him.
Yes?
He tried to climb down to it, and he fell, senor. For 3 days, he lay unconscious. And when he recovered his senses, he had the fever.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, he found his way out. He does not know how. He staggered back to his home. They found him in a jungle, crawling on his hands and knees, clutching this little statue and saying over and over, La Puerta Negra! La Puerta Negra!
The what?
The black door, senor.
A black door?
Si, senor. And my poor grandfather, he was never strong enough to go hunting again, but he kept his little statue. And he said it had saved his life.
What did he mean by the black door?
Oh, one cannot say, senor. He could not remember.
Surely he went back to the lost city?
Bueno, he was not strong enough. Besides, there were the savages.
But you mean nobody ever tried to find the city again?
Well, why should they, senor? It belonged to the dead. Well, they might be angry if the living came to disturb them, eh?
It was all superstition.
Si, senor. Now, me, I am not superstitious, eh? I speak American well. The senor wishes to find this lost city. I, Pedro Ramirez, know where it is.
Go on.
You see, my grandfather described it to me. The mountains where it is hidden. Mm-hmm. They are 3 days' walk from here.
Another 3 days. Now, that's 50 or 60 miles. What direction?
Senor, that is the question, eh? What direction? A most important question, no?
I get it. How much?
A mere pittance for a rich yankee, senor. $1,000 American.
$1,000?
And one half of all the treasure.
What treasure is that?
Oh, there must be treasure, senor. Why else would you seek this lost city?
Because I want to become a professor at a university and marry a girl named Marcia, whose father is head of the Department of Archaeology.
All right.
$1,000 if you actually guide me to the city you say your grandfather found.
And half the treasure.
Yes. Half the treasure. If any.
We sealed the bargain with a glass of tequila. And the next day, Pedro came with me in the helicopter. He directed me to fly to the southeast, and I did, hovering as low as I dared over the rocky edges and jungle.
We've come more than 50 miles, Pedro. No sign of that city yet.
Oh, yes, senor. There to the left. There is the mountain.
What's that? Now, you're crazy. That's the cone of an extinct volcano.
Si, senor. And the lost city is inside the volcano.
Oh, now, wait a minute. How could that be?
Well, I do not know. I was not there when it was built.
On the other hand, city of the fire god. I wonder. Well, I haven't looked into that volcano yet, so here goes.
High in the air over the top of the old dead volcano. And we came out over a deep circular valley grown up with jungle now. But there, in the center of the jungle, was a group of stone buildings dominated by a vast ruined temple.
Senor! Senor! The lost city of my grandfather! Oh, it is rich with treasure! I have the feeling.
But even if it isn't, this is one of the biggest finds in the history of Central America. We're going down now. We'll sit down on that level spot right in front of the temple.
settled in front of the old temple. I cut the motors. And for a moment, we just sat there taking it in. Stone towers. The ancient carvings. The massive walls that had been put into place by men whose bones had turned to dust maybe 3,000-4,000 years ago. And then we climbed out. We were both armed. We had flashlights. And I had a small hammer and chisel tucked into my belt. Aboard the helicopter, I had a case of dynamite if any blasting was necessary, but this was just to be a preliminary survey, so I left it where it was. Pedro and I found ourselves on a big stone plaza with a partially ruined temple in front of us. The entrance was flanked by two tremendous stone carvings. Oddly enough, very like something from Egypt. Human figures with heads that were vaguely dog-like, which made them seem most unhuman.
Senor, those statues, I do not like them.
Yes, they are rather odd. But I'm more interested in those designs carved in the rock above them.
Huh? Designs, senor? Oh, they but show the moon, the new moon and the old moon.
Yes, and there are more moons all over the front of the temple. Now, that's unusual. Most of the old civilizations in this area worship the sun.
Si, senor, but I cannot help wondering.
Wondering what?
Why the man who made those statues put the heads of dogs on them.
It was dark inside the temple, but our flashlights gave us enough light. Vast stone pillars supported a roof high above us as we moved down along a lengthy corridor. And then we came into a central rotunda and got some sunlight through a crack in the roof.
Senor! Gold! Gold! 10 statues! 12 statues! And each of them solid gold! Come, come, look, senor! Gold! Gold! I have reached! I have reached!
Pedro was right. Ranged in a circle in the middle of the rotunda were 12 golden statues about 5 feet high. They were all human figures with dog-like heads. And they were all looking at a spot on the floor in the middle of the circle they made.
Oh, senor! Look! Look, the jewels! Jewels! Baskets of them! Oh, senor! Senor, I am the richest man in the world!
At the foot of each statue, a carved stone basket. Each one has a handful of gems in it. Obviously, these statues were worshipped. The gems were tribute.
Pedro, have you taken a good look at these statues? Shine your light on this one.
Madre mia! Again, the head of the dog!
Yes, they're all dog-headed statues. And all their eyes are focused on one spot over there. It seems to be something carved on the floor. Let's see what that is. Formations our astronomers know, unless the Russians have some new pictures they're not talking about. If this carving represents the real geography of the moon. Pedro?
Yes, senor?
The artist who carved this must at some time have seen the dark side of the moon, which no human being has ever glimpsed. sounds crazy. But the more I studied that round black carving, the more I was convinced it was an accurate relief map of the dark side of the moon. And then we discovered something else. Around the rim of that black disk was a series of crevices filled with tar. I dug the tar out, and under it, in each crevice, we found a small basalt statuette like the one that Pedro had originally shown me. In each crevice but one, which was empty.
Senor, see? The story of my grandfather is true. This little statue he brought back, look. It just fits into this tiny hole.
Yes, yes, it does. Yeah. Black door. This must be the black door that he talked about.
Oh, si, senor. La Puerta Negra. The black door. But how does it open?
I don't know. Now, wait, wait. Suppose we stand each of these little statues upright. Yes. Yes, they fit tightly like handles. Now, if we push them...
Si, senor, we push.
And it's turning.
The black disc is turning. And now it's loose.
Now we can lift it up.
Let us lift it. Down there, maybe more treasure, eh? More gold, more jewels.
All right. Now it's coming.
See?
There. It's open. And there's a well-worn flight of steps leading down to the heart of the old volcano. We stood there, staring down to that black passageway that seemed to down endlessly. I didn't like the looks of it. But Pedro had gold fever. He thought that there might be whole vaults of treasure down below. I couldn't talk him out of looking, so I went along too. The tunnel sloped downward, ever downward to the heart of the ancient volcano. We came across evidence of much usage, broken pottery, strange carvings on the wall. Our curiosity led us on until presently we came to a cavern whose walls seemed to be lined by a curious growth.
Senor, look!
Yes, yes, mushrooms or something very much like mushrooms, solid sheets of it all lining the wall.
No, senor, that is not what I mean. Look here. Look through here.
Oh, a narrow crevice. There's a room in there.
That's not a room. It is what is in the room. Come, shine your light.
Then let us sleep, senor. What has got you so worked up? It can't be treasure. I see.
See? The skeletons, senor. Many skeletons. Hundreds, men. Lying one upon the other.
Yes, yes. That rocky room is full of human bones. As much as I hate to say it.
What, senor?
The ones I can see best have tooth marks on them.
Oh, senor, let us leave here swiftly. Let us return to the airplane, eh? Let us take the treasure and go.
Easy now, Pedro. These bones have been here hundreds of years, maybe thousands.
Old bones or new bones, I do not like these bones.
No cause for alarm. I don't know.
Why does the senor study so hard the mushrooms on the wall?
These mushrooms certainly haven't been here for 1,000 years, and along here it looks to me as if big handfuls of them have been broken off.
Broken off? For why?
There's only one thing I know of you can do with mushrooms, and that's eat them. Pedro and I stood staring at each other. I was pretty sure that something, or somebody, had recently been eating that mushroom-like fungus. And I was beginning to wonder what or who when we heard it from somewhere far down below us.
Senor, what's that? It
sounded like a dog howling.
A dog? No. There is no dog.
Well, what if it's not a dog? What is it?
A demon, senor. A devil.
Oh, forget that superstition. Something down there, impossible as it seems, something living.
And if we do not leave, there will be something dying down here, senor. Please come.
Yes, but I'm trying to figure out what on earth I could...
Senor Landrish, those are not dogs upstairs. The statues, the people with heads of dogs upon them. Does the senor not realize where it is that is howling?
Until that second, I hadn't made the connection. And then I realized the full significance of those statues. It couldn't be. It was impossible. But what other answer was there? We turned to head to the surface, and just as we did so, I saw something coming up the tunnel toward us. Something that was a pallid white shape in the light of my flashlight. Something running on all fours and howling hungrily at the distance.
Shoot, senor, shoot!
Okay, that stopped it. Now, let's get out of here. We didn't even stop to look at what I'd shot. I'm not sure I wanted to look. We just turned and ran up that long tunnel to the surface. And as we went, the howling things pursued us. We could hear them behind us like a pack of hungry animals. From time to time, I started to fire my gun. But I seemed to scare them. We finally popped out into that ruined temple with the 12 dog-headed gods. And I understood at last what that black door was for. It sealed the entrance to the underground world where they lived. Pedro and I flung ourselves on the ground. A great round slab of black rock was, and we couldn't move it. It was wedged open somehow, and we couldn't get it closed.
Senor, quickly! They will follow us in a moment!
Gathered down there beyond the first bend. Obviously, they don't like light.
They are getting up there. Hurry!
Oh, we've got to shut them in. We can't let those things loose.
We can't shut the black door.
We can do nothing. The helicopter, quickly.
I got it. The dynamite in the helicopter. We'll blow in the mouth of the tunnel.
Oh, senor.
You heard me. It'll only take 60 seconds. Yeah, that'll keep him quiet another minute or two. Now, come on. Help me with that case of dynamite. It took us less than a minute to get the case of dynamite, bring it back inside the temple and light a fuse.
And then I shoved the whole case down the steps into the black tunnel.
Pedro and I hurried back into the open, scrambled into the helicopter, and started the motor just in case.
Ah, Senor Landry.
What is it?
The treasure. The jewels. We did not bring them.
We can get them after the tunnel is blown in. You don't want to tangle with those dog-headed creatures, do you?
No, por los santos, no. But, Senor, what are they? They must be demons, for surely they are not of this world.
Well, I agree with you, but they're not demons. That does it. The tunnel is closed for good. Now, Pedro.
Senor, the temple is collapsing. And the earth is shaking. Senor, it's an earthquake.
Pedro, there's only one place for us to go, and that's straight up. The helicopter jumped 1,000 feet straight up, just before the temple crashed from the spot where we had been. And then we watched from a box seat while the lost city crumbled into ruins. The dynamite blast had triggered off an earthquake, and the earthquake rocked the ground like a man shaking a baby's rattle.
Senor, the jewels, the gold, they are down there under many rocks.
Yes, and so are the dog-headed creatures. Suppose they'd got loose on the world after being caged underground for thousands of years.
Oh, I can only think of all that treasure. For a little while, I was the richest man in the world. I owned a lost city full of jewels. Now I own nothing.
After things quiet down, I can bring back an expedition. We'll dig in the ruins. The jewels will still be there.
You see? See, that is true, no? I will be rich yet, no? I will buy myself 3 automobiles and 12 silk shirts. I will smoke cigars all day long and have servants to do everything. Senor, I am ruined.
What is it now?
See, that volcano. He's coming to life. See, the smoke is coming from the ground. Senor, fly higher or we are doomed.
Dynamite triggered an earthquake, and the earthquake opened up fissures leading far down to where the volcanic fires had been banked for thousands of years. And by the time we got 10 miles away, that entire mountain was blowing up in a vast spouting fire and ashes and molten rock. But somewhere down in the heart of that inferno was the lost city. City of the Fire God. It would have made my reputation. Enough treasure to pay off the national debt. And a howling mob of creatures you wouldn't want to meet this side of hell. Well, that's the story. About the new volcano, and now you know what caused it. Would you like to know my theory about those creatures? Well, it's this. 6 or 7,000 years ago, this old earth had some visitors, refugees, you might call them. And some of them settled in Egypt, some in Central America. They brought some highly scientific skills with them, including the secret of overcoming gravity. They ruled for a while, worshipped as gods, and then died out. All except a few who found inside an old volcano a spot just about like home. The native priests managed to lock them in behind that black door, kept them prisoners. After the natives died out, the dog people existed underground, living on mushrooms and keeping their race alive at an animal level. Now they're gone now. But here's a tip for the Army and the Air Force. When you land your first missiles on the moon, keep your eyes open and your guns ready. Because inside those tremendous craters of the moon, living far underground where, maybe, there's still warmth and air, I have a hunch you're going to be running into people. Moon people. Who look a lot like us. Except for their heads. Suspense. You've been listening to The Black Door, starring Robert Reddick, featuring Ralph Camargo, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur. Directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Listen again next week when we return with Man Trap, written by John Roberts. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Listen to Carol Burnett and Richard Hayes weeknights on the CBS Radio Network.
That's going to do it for the Relic Radio Show for this week. But the old-time radio continues tomorrow. We'll have a new episode of Case Closed featuring Richard Diamond and Bulldog Drummond. We'll also have our horror replay with a little something from the Hall of Fantasy. That'll be tomorrow. In the meantime, RelicRadio.com's got more old-time radio for you. Links to the other shows and episodes of those shows, and links to everything else Relic Radio. You can email me at RelicRadio@gmail.com. Thank you for joining me this week, as always. I'll be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.